beautiful is thy tongue, O Shep, tinged with the crimson of fading sunset, lolling, hanging, panting. Beautiful is thy tongue, O Shep, dangling gracefully, daintily from your mouth, gracefully swaying as you turn your head to and fro. Beautiful is thy tongue, O Shep.
The author of that poem about a favorite pet was Jacqueline Jackson, but it could be you.
WSSR Radio at Sangamon State University brings you Reading and Writing and Radio, a program about the process of writing creatively. To conduct today's program, here's children's author Jacqueline Jackson.
The little poem that we used for the opener, Beautiful is Thy Tongue, O Shep, I wrote when I was in the fourth grade. I meant it to be gently humorous. To call such an object as a dog's tongue beautiful has a touch of humor. I also meant it to be a gentle parody of the biblical Psalms, which I heard every Sunday in church. How amiable are thy tabernacles, O Lord of hosts. I think it also shows how I felt about animals, because I see it as a warm and affectionate poem. You can tell that I like dogs. I was lucky to grow up on a Wisconsin farm, where we had lots of animals and where it was easy to have pets. I was attending a dull banquet when I was about 18 or 19, and for some reason or other I got thinking about animals and how much I had learned from animals. I forgot the dull banquet as I wrote an article in my mind, which I called Children and Animals, about how valuable animals are to children growing up, for meeting their needs and for helping them to learn. For instance, I remember when I was at the age where my voice was changing from a child's voice to a young lady's voice, you know, where you begin to get the quaver in it when you sing, called vibrato, that I would go down to the barn and I would sit on the edge of the calf pen and sing to my calf, Perry, trying out this new voice that I was afraid to use around the house. Perry didn't mind my singing to her, and the other calves didn't seem to either, and it helped me to become more self-confident in this new state in my life. I never wrote that article, but what would have gone into it has come out in bits and pieces in my various books in, I think, a better way. Sometimes by the by, as animal companions, that they are there when you need them for comfort. My book, Julie's Secret Sloth, has an animal as a major part of the plot. And in that, I have Julie saying some things about the values of animals. I wouldn't let a car hit you, Samson. You're my responsibility. Virginia Ann, that doll on top of you, she got run over once. I left her in the driveway. But a car could kill you because you're living. That's why you're so much better than a doll. Did you know that? She continues along the street with Samson in the baby buggy. And with a doll, she went on, shading the buggy with the hood, it doesn't really matter. You can leave it out overnight or accidentally break a leg, but I have to keep thinking about you all the time because you're living. And if I don't, nobody will, because you're all mine. Just as Daddy and Mother take care of me, I take care of you. So you don't need to worry about anything, Samson. Having a pet teaches us responsibility. If we don't feed that pet goes hungry. As we grow up, we need to take increasing responsibility, to feel that we are important to somebody, that we are not just being taken care of, but that we are helping to take care. And animals do this for us. One of the tragedies of our animals was that we had a little pet lamb, and we allowed neighbors to give the lamb a bath. They wanted to wash the lamb and get it snowy white, and they washed the lamb, and Josephine became snowy white. And 2 days later, I felt the lamb and discovered that she was still soaking wet. They had not dried her properly, and in my ignorance, I had not realized that we should have the lamb dried properly, and Josephine died of pneumonia. So you see, having a pet, even when you're an adult, involves responsibility of knowledge. You have to know how to take care of a pet. You have to educate yourself and find out what is the best thing for that animal, whether a lamb should have a bath, for instance. I think one of the most important things about an animal is that we need to give affection. Ours isn't a very demonstrative country, and we don't have very many chances to give affection. Oh, it's all very well when we're little babies. We get fondled and hugged and loved. And then when you grow up, you're ready to enter into the adult kind of giving affection. But there's a period in our lives where it's very difficult both to give and to receive affection. And yet we need that very much. These are the years when we reject being hugged by a parent, where we think that it's babyish to sit in somebody's lap. And here, you see, is where an animal comes in very nicely. You can hug an animal, you can lug an animal around. It's there when you need it, and it fills your and my physical need of loving and of touching. It's also a time when we need to get affection. And animals give affection abundantly. And they give it in a very special way that we human beings might well take a lesson from. So much love of us comes mixed with judgment. People are saying to us, parents, teachers, often without even realizing it, I will love you if you are a good girl or a good boy, or if you will do something for me, or if you will give love in return. We use love and approval so much as a means of manipulation. But does a dog ever put any conditions on how he loves you? Does he ask any questions? No. A dog knows when you're feeling wretched. He will give a lick or two. He will be there. He will match your mood. If you want exuberance, he will give you exuberance. If you want to cry into his furry muff of a neck, as our Jill has frequently done when the world gets too much for her, he will be there. He will be there sympathetic, and he will not withhold his love from you if you have not measured up in many, many ways. He will accept you. A cat will too, but in a different sort of way. I think that you learn from animals about different sorts of affection. A dog gives you a slobbery sort of love. A cat is aloof. We used to take hikes on the farm, and we discovered that cats would take hikes with us. But they weren't there running around our feet like the dogs would be. They were half a field away with their tail just visible above the alfalfa. But they would go as far as you went, and when you turned, that tail would be coming back through the alfalfa, still a half of a field away. The cat gives affection on his terms. I had a pet goat. And I discovered that that goat, who seemed not to give affection, really did. And it was fun to test that affection through a game that was a hide-and-seek game. The goat would be cropping the grass, enjoying herself, paying no attention to me, but would be there, and I would be there, and then I would hide. After a minute or two, the goat would raise her head. She would look around. She would go, baa. She would look around some more. She would go, baa. And then she would start running in circles. I would appear from behind the tree, or else she would come and run and discover me behind the tree. And then, as if it made no difference to her at all, she would drop her head and begin eating again. So you may make the comparison that people also love in different ways. Some people are more reserved, but love just the same. I remember a college student reading Mary Poppins and being so shocked and saying what a terrible person Mary Poppins was, that she didn't love those children. She was so mean to them. But I bet you when you read Mary Poppins that you can see that Mary Poppins loves those children. The book, The Island of the Blue Dolphins, while we're mentioning books, is about an Indian girl who is alone on an island for 17 years. You might think that the story is about how she survived on this island in various physical sorts of ways. But if you read that book a second time, or if you read it with your heart, you will realize that even though she was able to survive physically on that island, she couldn't have survived mentally, emotionally. She would have gone mad if she was not able to give and to receive love. And that was why she tamed the wild dogs who had killed her brother, so that she was able to have this very vital thing for her own survival. Another thing that you learn with animals is that you see a full cycle of life. We had a dog once who brought himself home a wife, a little stray dog. It was the funniest thing. He herded her into the yard. He protected her. If she started to leave the yard, he would chase her back into the yard. If other dogs came, he would chase them away. We named this little stray dog Tweezer, and it became apparent after a while that Tweezer was pregnant and was going to have a family. She had that family on the back porch. We enjoyed the birth of the puppies. We enjoyed the puppyhood of the puppies and watching them grow, finding homes for them. And with animals, not just dogs, but gerbils and hamsters and so forth, you're able to see a full view of life, from the mating to, alas, the death, because most animals have a much shorter life cycle than we do, and they do die. There's a book called either Man Meets Dog or Dog Meets Man, I can never get it straight, by one of my heroes, Conrad Lorenz, who is an animal psychologist, and he's written a very loving and informative book on dogs, and he brings up this problem of death of dogs and how sad it is that your loved and faithful companion has a lifespan of only 14 or 15 years, if you're lucky, and then leaves you. And the way he met this problem was by having a continuity of the dog's family. He would have a son of the dog that he loved be the dog that would go on with him. I discovered both from Conrad Lorenz and from my own experience with animals that they have individual personalities. We had two pet rabbits that we raised as house rabbits to see if it was possible, and it was, with some difficulties. And Sebastiana and Grey Boy were from the same litter, brother and sister, identical looking, and yet those two stupid little bunnies were as different in personality. Raised in the same way, you see, they both came from the rabbit pen to being house rabbits. They were the most different rabbits that you ever could imagine. One was a leader, one was a follower. One got into mischief, the other one was docile and good and obedient. One did funny, amusing things, the other one was content to watch the partner do funny and amusing things. I've mentioned several books, and there are so many other books that talk about animals and the value of animals are implicit in their stories. I can't go into detail on them, but you might try Ring of Bright Water about otters. A Wisconsin book by Sterling North is Rascal, the story of his pet raccoon. There's a fantasy by Randall Jarrell called The Animal Family, but it describes a bear and a lynx so lovingly that you think that the author must surely have known them. I haven't ever read The Yearling or My Friend Flicka, but these are books that I've heard are very strong in relationships between a child and an animal. And one that I have read that is beautifully written and little known is called One is One, a medieval story of a young boy who becomes an artist, and it starts with his pathological horror of dogs because he was mauled by dogs as a small child, and how he is able to overcome this feeling for dogs and to have a loved dog. One of the things that's the most fun about animals is the funniness of them, which you can view with compassion and with humor and delight. I mentioned Sterling North's raccoon. We had several raccoons at various times, and our favorite, Sig, was such an amusing creature. We loved, for instance, to give him an ice cube in a milk bottle and see him reach and grapple and get a hold of the ice cube. And finally, when he would get it out of the milk bottle, he would pat it all over the kitchen floor. And when that ice cube finally dwindled away to its final little puddle, his rage at the disappearance of the ice cube and making his whirring noise of displeasure, how he would hunt all over the kitchen for what could ever have happened to that ice cube. We had two little pet pigs that gave us lots of entertainment, Sausage and Petunia. Like Wilbur in Charlotte's Web, they were both runts of litters, and we brought them in, fed them on bottles, and they grew up being more or less house pigs. We didn't try to housebreak them, but they became house pigs of their own imagination because Sausage learned to open the screen door with his snout. It was a loose screen door, and he would wiggle it until he got it open a crack, and then thrust in his little burnished snout, hold the door open while Petunia squeezed in under his neck, and then he would follow her in, and you would hear after a while their little feet click-clicking along the floor, and their as they were looking into rooms and trying to discover their friends. Another thing I feel I've learned is the simplicity of life for an animal, the joy of life. They don't want lots of things. They don't want lots of entertainment. A baby goat is filled with joy and will leap just for pure blood racing through his veins. A dog will show you the satisfaction of a good scratch. A pig will show you the gusty enjoyment of food without having to worry about manners or whether he is overeating or is not behaving in some sort of civilized way. You see the simple pleasures of life, and it makes me, at any rate, wonder how did we ever get things so complicated? It also teaches you about other people as you see their relationship with animals. You see that other people will tease an animal, to make it unhappy or frightened. I have seen instances of cruelty to animals that have been appalling to me. And these show you that human beings, while they can be very fine, can also be very terrible. For our writing today, let's think about the animals that we've known. Maybe you've never had an animal, no dog or cat or parakeet in your house. But surely you've known a friend's pet or a neighbor's dog, perhaps only to be frightened of. But as you think over the animals you have known, your own and other people's, when did an animal ever comfort you and not ask any questions? When did an animal make you laugh? When did one let you see something about yourself, what it means to be alive? When, through animals, did you learn something about other people? For our pets need us, but when have we needed our pets? We teach our pets, but when do they teach us? And when, if ever, have we seen beauty in our pets? When have we felt, "Beautiful is thy tongue, O Shep"?
WSSR Radio at Sangamon State University has presented Reading and Writing and Radio. Send your writings to Jacqueline Jackson, Sangamon State University, Springfield, Illinois, 62708.